Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. You haven't even started the show.
You're okay, yeah, goodbye, no, right? You know what? You know, I'm sorry, Paul. Yeah, hello, everybody, and welcome to another year of The Rad Life.
Yay!
We are coming on our fourth year on the air.
It hasn't been that long. Come on.
You know, with you? It feels like a lifetime. No, I'm kidding. I kid. No, it's a great feeling, actually. I realized today that we're coming on literally on 4 years of being on the air weekly. I mean, like, oh my God, I didn't have any clue that I could speak for that long, right?
You've got it.
I've got it. Yeah, I guess. But you know what? It really, this show is nothing if it's not about the guests, and that's what have made this show, I think, stick around as long as it has. I want to give just a shout out for everybody that's listening, and the reason why we're delayed for a few minutes, because an avid fan of the show, give a shout out to Mr. Steve, the Spaniard Madrid.
That's right.
Out there. Sister Carrie is my guest on the show today. Oh my God, Steve, you know what I just realized? Your sister actually made it on the show before you did.
Right.
What? Yeah. Oh, I'm never going to hear the end of this one. Yeah. He's already blasting me on social media. I can already feel it.
I thought he would be here when I got here. I thought he'd be waiting to be.
Is he in town?
I don't know.
The man's like on
he's
a plane.
Never home.
He's never home.
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, if you were in town, Steve, and you didn't make it here, I mean, you know, I have no words for you.
Shame on you.
Other than your sister made it on the show before you did.
Right.
He's already blasting. I can feel it. I feel it on social media. He's blasting me already. But I really, in all seriousness, though, thank you so much, everybody, for watching this show, for your feedback, your support, your candid feedback sometimes. Hopefully, we will continue to raise the bar, bring you content that's meaningful to your life. It's really all about that for me. Many people have asked me, like, how does this monetize to your interior design, business? And it's like, it doesn't. This is about me basically really engaging with people that have something to say. They are honoring me by showing up and actually sharing their unfiltered experiences, and I get to do this every week. So you know what? I get rewarded every week with actually having a connection with people on a level that, unfortunately, in society these days, we do not really have.
Right?
We have a lot of meetings, and we have a lot of friends on social media, and we have a lot of connections, but we don't really have a depth of contact. So with that being said, Paul, I'd love to hear from everybody. So what number can they call in to give us their thoughts?
Same number, same bat channel, 949-330-7761. Operators standing by.
And please call us. I know it's a futile thing that I ask for people to do, because they'll just...
I don't know why they don't want
to
call.
But they want to tweet. What do they want to tweet? How can
just
they get
hold of us? Just at OC Talk Radio.
OC Talk Radio.
Everybody wants to tweet or text or whatever, go on social media, but we do have real phone lines into the studio.
So I don't know about you guys. I don't know about you, Carrie, but you know, I walked into the studio saying that, you know, last year... It's kind of a bizarre year.
Definitely.
Right? I don't know about... I mean, Paul, you can weigh in on this, too. It's the first show of the year for The Rad Life, and we'd like to think that we don't sugarcoat anything. And I'm not knocking last year. There was a lot of good stuff that came out of last year.
Good riddance.
Absolutely. You know, we good riddance came out of last year. No, but a lot of good stuff came out of last year. And we set up a media company under Golden State Media Group. We rolled out another show called Deluxe Life. You know, there's a lot of personal growth on my part. People around me, I really feel like I had some relationships that came my way that were really meaningful relationships. You know, I started to have a little bit of wherewithal about filtering some of this sort of negative energy that sucks the energy mm-hmm. out of your lives. And I don't know, I put out a little message. I think it's whenever I am on the road to go to the radio show, to do the radio show, I get a little bit like amped a little bit, right? So I put out a message, and I apologize if it offended anybody today, but you know what?
We amp up everybody because this is radio.
This is radio, and I'm not...
We have an amplifier.
Am I subject to SEC?
Sure.
I'm not subject to SEC.
We'll make you subject to it.
You know what? Fuck doing more.
What?
I love you already.
What? Fuck doing more in 2018, right? Yeah. Fuck doing more, okay? How about we do less and we're more efficient and effective about it, all right, in 2019? Can I get an amen on that one, please?
Amen, bro.
Okay. All right. So with that being said, people are challenged with real things in life, not, oh my God, I didn't have enough followers. Did I go viral? I mean, give me a friggin' break, right?
Right.
There are people that actually are facing real challenges, and they come at you when you least expect them, and you're faced with them, and it's sort of that, you know, that old cliche, it's a true metal. You really know what you're made out of when you are faced with these things, and what costs you to go through that journey, right?
And how are you going to tie this to today?
Well, because there is one of these things that is both a blessing and a curse in our society these days.
Yeah.
Okay, we are blessed in that we are able to identify it sooner, diagnose it more, you know, understand it more, but it still has this sort of weighted stigma with it. It has this sort of sense of, you know, especially when it hits people in sort of a very, you know, in a manner that impacts their physicality, their self-image, all of this stuff, and that is cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I started off saying, you know, fuck do more,
yeah.
Fuck cancer too.
Yeah.
Right?
In a big way. Yeah.
And Carrie, I mean, you know, I told you, this is a candid show. So, you know, let's start off with who you are. And thank you, Steve, in seriousness. Thank you for connecting me with Carrie. He's the boss in all of us.
Now that Pops is gone, he's the boss.
Well,
when he called me and said, I need you to go,
yeah.
I'm going.
Well, you know what? Your dad would be very proud of both of you.
Thank you so much.
I know you guys were very close. And, you know, again, condolences. It's been a while, I know. But you know what? He's always with you. I think people leave footprints on people's hearts,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you guys are manifestations of exactly what he stood for, from what I know from Steve.
Thank you.
So, my pleasure. So, with that being said, let's talk a little bit about who you are. You're here as a co-founder and president of the CARE Project.
We don't even know who she is.
Of the CARE Project. So, my guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is none other than Carrie Madrid, president and co-founder of the CARE Project, Inc. And the website is thecareprojectinc.com.
.org.
It's a nonprofit. And why don't you tell us about yourself and how you came about to found or co-found the CARE Project, Carrie?
Well, that's a really loaded question. I'll give you a condensed version.
Oh, we like loaded questions.
And I'm glad you said unfiltered, because I am a bit
unfiltered. Oh, please, unfiltered as you want.
All right, great. So
she's not going to swear now, is she?
Yeah.
Sit in the back. Just sit back, Paul.
My board members are probably listening or watching, so I'll try to keep it.
I already set the bar. If your board members are still around after a couple of F-bombs,
well,
I mean, we're
that's
good.
That's my usual.
Okay.
So I am a divorced single mom, and at the age of 40 in 2011, I was pretty much in the best shape of my life. I felt pretty strong, and was the booster president for the girls' basketball program at North High School in downtown Riverside, where my daughter played. I've worked as a clinical conference coordinator for a catastrophic case management company for 18 years now.
Wow.
And I do so at home, which has been fantastic.
Right.
So it had lended itself, I could go and be very involved with the kids and their stuff. So I was the sports mom, the booster president.
So you had this sort of engagement and kind of outward giving component to your daily life anyway.
Yeah,
right?
I was kind of everybody's mom.
Everybody's mom.
And so I was walking up Mount Rubidoux, which is our local mountain out there, twice a day, super good shape, and was just having a conversation with my creator and said, you know, what am I supposed to do with the last half of my life? I mean, I'm surviving as a single mom, barely, but I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But my kids are getting older. The girls are going to graduate soon, and I can't stay at the high school
What's
raising
next?
Money.
Yeah, what do I do next?
Like, what do I do next that makes a difference? And probably within 2 weeks, I rolled over in bed and found two tumors on my left breast.
Oh, my gosh.
And I just instantly knew that it was breast cancer, and I had a complete peace about it. And I can't describe it. It sounds real cliche or, you know, storybook. It's not. It's very raw. But I did have a complete peace about it.
What do you credit that to, looking back now?
Looking back now, I think I think a lot of people say, you know, oh, what am I supposed to do? What's my purpose? Blah, blah, blah. But at the time that I said that, walking around that mountain, I called my sanctuary, right? And so walking around that mountain, I truly meant that with everything in me. Mm. I'd said that in the past, but sort of flippantly, like, oh, I'm sick of this job or da 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 da. And so I think I was just totally open and ready, truly ready for what is my real purpose other than being a mom. When you're a mom and you become a mom at 18, mm-hmm. you know, your whole identity as an adult is as a mom.
Of course.
So what am I going to do next? So I just had a piece about it. And so since I was...
So was your piece about it, and I guess mm-hmm. what I'm trying to get down to is when you realized that you were actually dealing with breast cancer.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you immediately kind of had a wherewithal
about it. I just knew.
You knew, right? But you were a piece about it.
Mm-hmm.
So was that piece about it because it was just sort of more based on your faith, based on the circumstance and that you'll deal with it?
I can't even pinpoint it. If I'm being honest, I can't pinpoint it.
I appreciate that honesty because it's fascinating.
So I was due to have my very first mammogram at age 40. Mm-hmm. You know, I was turning 41 mm-hmm. Like 2 months later. And so my snack bar buddy with the basketball moms was Dr. Martin, who's one of my closest friends, and she's actually my primary care doctor.
Okay.
So I said to her, I think I felt something, and she's like, let's go. It's time for your first mammogram anyway.
Yeah.
So sure enough, I got the diagnosis, and when my surgeon came in, and who did the biopsies or whatever, he came in the room, and he just said, you know, I have some bad news for you, and I looked at him, and I think I put my hand on his knee because I'm kind of demonstrative.
You were comforting the physician?
And I just said, you know, it's okay. I already know. And he said, you know, it's okay. You can have a breakdown. And I said, and he was so kind.
Like you're sort of in denial.
Right. And I just looked at him and I was like, yeah, no, I'm really okay. And one of my best friends was with me and she looked at me and she said, how can you be so fucking calm?
Yeah.
And I just said, you know what?
It
blurted out without me thinking about it. But I remember the words today. I said, I have 32 basketball daughters watching me mm-hmm. and two of my own and my son.
Wow.
They're going to know how to deal with a life-threatening illness.
Wow. So you, in that moment...
I think I was in shock, though.
Well, you know...
but it did blurt out.
Understandably, though, that you would be in shock. You would be in... that's a pretty major thing to face and deal with.
Yeah.
You're dealing with it in your own way, it sounds like.
Yeah.
You might understand or not understand how and why you're dealing with it the way you are, which is fine, too. You know, we have this sort of demand on us that we should always be aware of why we are motivated to do certain things.
Right.
That's not necessarily reality.
Yeah.
Right?
That's not how my world works.
No. And in most people's world, really, if they were to admit and allow themselves that kind of surrender, if you will, that is how it happens, most likely than not.
Right.
But wow, Carrie, because what you also are just added is the fact that you were still aware, you're still being the mom for everybody, you're still aware of all these people's eyes on you, watching how you are going to deal with this and what your own experience could actually mean for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's amazing.
Well, that was my first thought. My whole life revolved around these girls.
Did you think you got strength from basically framing it that way for yourself?
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
Okay.
You know, my whole life was basketball.
Yeah.
You know, high school basketball and these girls, and they were having a record season, and they were going to go to state for the first time, and I was...
I'm not letting my cancer get in the
way. I was with them the whole time, and so I literally left that appointment scheduling, fighting with my surgeon, fighting about when my mastectomy was going to be because I was
based
like,
on your schedule.
I was like, look, we're in playoffs and we have a game on Thursday.
He was like, this can't wait.
I said, no, this has to wait. And, you know, I had two tumors. One was very large, one was small. So there was an urgency to get it done.
Sure.
But I did schedule around playoffs.
Playoffs.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So, okay. So playoffs are over. How did you do in the playoffs?
They went to state. I couldn't go with them because I just started chemo and Dr. Martin threatened me. My immune system was shot. So I watched them on TV and they lost by like one. But they made a record. They had a record season. They dedicated their season to me publicly. It was very touching.
Yeah,
they
were
my strength. I don't want to cry. There would be days where I felt like death warmed over and I just wanted to say, fuck chemo. I'm not doing it anymore.
Right.
And one of my girls would just text me, and they all called me Mama Carrie, and they would say, Mama Carrie, you're a thug. Mm-hmm. That was their thing, and I was like, oh, you guys. So when I finally finished, they said, now you're really a thug, you know? But that became our thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they just kept me going.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
That's wonderful that you had basically understandably you were there for them and this was already a relationship that was established, but they kind of switched gear and acted almost like your support group.
They did. And, you know, I learned to fundraise and start a nonprofit because of that. job.
For the basketball booster president.
Yeah.
Amazing how lessons and the skills that we pick up along the way.
Every little experience has led me to where I am right now.
That's fascinating. Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah, you know, I just got kind of little chills. Mm-hmm. It's true. That life journey sometimes, you know, you don't even know.
Even that little meaningless job that you think you held just to pay the bills for that moment. Uh-huh. All those different experiences. Mm-hmm. They do. It's funny that you mentioned in the intro about cliches, because this is an instance when you're dealing with a life-threatening disease that all those stupid cliches really become true.
Well, and people are nervous. They don't really know how to relate to stuff. It's almost like we were talking about with the, you know, like it's a new year. So, you know, the funniest thing I saw today was somebody actually posted something, like they posted something. I was like, oh, hey, you know, wishing you a prosperous and joyous new year. And their comment was, is everybody ready for 3 months of this? That, talk about a cliche. It's like, okay, so I have no idea what to really generate. And this is sort of sad, right? Because I don't know whether it's fear, not that muscle is not really engaged. We kind of have stepped away from really dealing and interacting with one another on a very real way.
Personal
versus
level.
8x10 glossy, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, bougie, and all the trappings and the, you know, colorful borders. Oh, my God, I don't even have to have my own face without a border on Facebook anymore. I can actually pick from borders,
right?
And so we have kind of disconnected, I think. Mm-hmm. From really genuinely being connected with people.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it started off probably where you didn't interact with your neighbors because you literally pulled into your garage at the end of the day
and shut the door. That's it,
and that was, you know, your bubble of your car.
Right.
But then to actually go out there and to put yourself out there to avoid those cliches, and I'm not knocking them. They're there for a reason. They help people through navigating that.
Right.
But at the end of the day, what are you really saying?
Right.
When you say that to me, right? Like, that's coming from you deep, and is there a depth that it can even come from?
Right.
So I love the fact that you had a relationship with these girls that where you basically acted. They basically acted, and I'm sure that's in an extended family manner as a support system for you.
Yes,
that you are able to look back and go, you know, all these pieces of my life, all these things that I picked up on my journey, have led me to this.
Absolutely.
Because now it makes sense to me when I see the language that you used on your website. And let's give the website out again, Carrie.
It's thecareprojectinc.org.
Careprojectinc.org. So go check it out. If you have any questions, please call us again or tweet us while Carrie's on the air. We can always connect you with her later as well. But this is, I understand this is a very personal thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't get more personal than this, right?
Yeah.
And especially, I don't know that especially for women, but I think more so for women probably, because there's a physical impact.
I used to think that too, and then I became friends with Brett Miller, who's the founder or co-founder of the Male Breast Cancer Coalition.
God, I love it when you pick up a soft lob like that. Uh-huh. Go ahead. Okay.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, since I started this, my whole thing is I have three brothers. I don't have any sisters. I'm not super girly, and all my best friends have been male for the most part. And so when I was diagnosed, I started doing research. You know, they tell you don't go online and look stuff up.
Yeah.
And you do, right?
Yeah.
And you
do.
And you figure out how much time you have left or whatever.
We all do.
So then I got curious, like, I wonder if my brothers could be affected. Uh-huh. Even though I had genetic testing and I'm negative, I just got to think, well, what are the statistics about male breast cancer? So I stumbled onto the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, and now we are affiliated with them, and I've learned a lot. And I've learned a lot about that impact, because I remember saying very early on in my experience with the CARE Project to a male survivor, well, at least your femininity isn't tied into it. And he stopped me cold in my tracks, and he said, okay, let me address that.
Yep.
And I said, okay. And he goes, I go to the beach all the time. Do you think I don't want to take my shirt off? Do you think I want to tell my guys that I'm going to get a breast implant or a pectoral implant?
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah. It's a different.
It's a different thing.
But it's as real.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know what, Carrie, that's actually a perfect time for us. Let's do this. Let's share, because there's a couple of statistics that you had on there. And I don't know if they're in your brochure or not, but there's one about how common. It is that women. Yeah. No, let's. I'm going to start with women, because I have members in my family that are breast cancer survivors.
Okay,
my sister, my aunts.
Okay.
You know, it didn't skip a generation. You know, all the wives' tale stuff. You know, it's like, oh, it'll skip a generation.
Yeah,
it's, you know, the gene is from the mother's side. Yeah. You know, if you have it in the family, then you're high. But there was some stuff that I saw on your stuff where, you know, you were talking about, you know, one in 833
men.
are subject to diagnosis of breast cancer.
Yes.
Male breast cancer.
1 in 8 women in their lifetime, 1 in 833 men.
And then the fact that women that may not have it in a family history.
So the fact is, it's, and I forget the exact percentage, but it's in the 80 to 85% range of breast cancer. It's not genetic.
And that's
what it's deemed sporadic, like mine.
So it is super critical to be aware of that.
Yeah, people say, oh, well, there's no history in my family, and
I don't need to worry about it.
No, you do. Right. Everybody is susceptible.
Right.
Everybody.
And
if you have breast tissue, you're susceptible.
Well, and I started off saying, you know, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, but we are blessed today to have more ability to catch it early.
Absolutely.
Because that is hugely correlated to survival.
Absolutely.
Right? And it is one of the most survivable cancers that are out there, I think, right?
I don't put a whole lot of stock into that. I think, for me, what I say, just based on my own personal experience,
not as
a medical professional, for me, I always say, if I had to be diagnosed with a type of cancer, I'll go ahead and take that breast cancer. Mm-hmm. Because I can live without breasts, right? But I can't live without my liver.
But there is also...
And the treatments have come so far.
So far. Yeah. I mean, you could do chemo pills, I understand... cancer research has gone so far. The thing that blows my mind is that we still are, as efficient as we have gotten, we still don't have a cure. We're still in the process of trying to resolve this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it impacts more people. I mean, I've shared this openly last year. My mother basically was diagnosed with non-operable, non-small cell lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
okay, last year in her 70s.
Yeah.
After 30-plus years of not smoking.
Right.
Right? And as much I had been doing this show and on seniors and on difficult topics for about 3 years.
Right.
As much as I thought I was prepared.
Right.
I was nowhere close to being prepared.
Right.
I mean, thank God for the time that I've spent looking at it, but when it hits you that close,
it's a whole different ballgame.
It's a whole different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
So with that being said, I want you to share what the mission of the organization is, because people go, well, there's a lot of people out there that basically are breast cancer oriented, cancer research and fundraising.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think your take on this, and it makes perfect sense after what you just shared candidly, mm-hmm. why you would take it this way, okay, or set it up this way.
Yeah.
Can you share with people what the mission of the organization is?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, let me just give you a little history, what my initial thought was.
Why would you go then into setting up an organization?
Yeah, so what happened is I would be in treatment. Now, I have Kaiser Insurance. I have a phenomenal team. I had fantastic care. They have a wonderful breast cancer program. Mm-hmm. And so I felt very fortunate, but I started engaging in online, like Facebook private groups of other breast cancer patients. And I was hearing the stories of how their insurance didn't provide basic things like a post-mastectomy garment
mm-hmm.
that holds everything in place in your drains. And they were figuring out ways to, you know, jerry-rig something to hold their drains up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what? Your insurance doesn't cover
that? Dignity factor.
Dignity, right? Common sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then I was forming friendships with these people across the country and mm-hmm. sometimes across the world. And some of them, right here in our area of Southern California, were choosing between a $100 copay for chemo or buying $100 worth of groceries for their teenagers. And I thought, that's real life bullshit right there. I got real angry because I thought, you know, I lived check to check as a single mom with very little child support, but I had my dad. And I had my brothers, and I had other people that stepped up and said,
"Yes, Steve,
Don't worry about that. She
really is your sister."
Steve got on a plane and he flew down the next day with Pam.
Yeah,
you know, after my mastectomy, and he just walked in like, "What do I do?"
Yeah, you guys are great, really.
So, I mean, my dad showed up whether I wanted him to or not, and he said, "Hand me all your bills." And I was like, "What? I don't want my dad seeing my bills. I'm 40." But I gave him a stack and he wrote checks, and I didn't have to worry about copays and things like that.
But not everybody is that fortunate.
However, even after he left, I still had some needs because this isn't something that is one and done. It goes on and on and on for months and months and years.
Yep.
So I started doing research on behalf of these other people that I met to see what resources are in our area. And there's a lot of breast cancer charities mm-hmm. that do a lot of wonderful things, mm-hmm. and they can get you a wig, and they can get you a prosthesis.
Diagnosis.
They can help you get a free mammogram. Mm-hmm. They raise research or money for research, which is obviously necessary.
Absolutely.
But there, I didn't find in 2012 any organizations in my immediate area that gave cash aid for the everyday necessities that become luxuries. So I said to Christina, my friend,
wow,
this is what we're going to do. I have a big, bright idea. And she said, oh, shit, what does that mean? And how are we going to do it? And I said, I don't know, but this is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how we're going to do it. And I shared the thought with my coworker. My thought was initially, it's just going to be financial aid. We're going to help people. We'll give them grocery gift cards to Ralph's or wherever, right? And maybe we'll help them pay some co-pays. I don't think we could pay medical bills, but let's just see what we could do with the everyday necessities that become luxuries.
Well, like you said, $100 for a copay.
Right.
Or $100 for groceries.
Nobody should have to choose that.
Yeah.
Nobody should have to choose that. Yeah. And so the mission became, you know, that we were going to provide financial and emotional support to male and female breast cancer patients. Mm-hmm. So then everyone started asking me, well, why do you feel the need to put male in there? Men don't get... So then we went on that. Look, I have three brothers, and I'm not excluding them. Because 1 in 833 doesn't sound like a lot. But if that one is you or him.
That's huge.
Or my three brothers.
My whole life just changed.
My whole life just changed.
And everybody around me's life changed.
So it's just morphed into so much more than that.
But, you know, a couple of years ago, nobody was talking about male prostate cancer either. And then all of a sudden, it's Movember every November. So, I want to thank you personally because I know that as much as there is awareness on and it's not a competition, but with women and breast cancer, there's so little that at least it's not saying that people are not out there working on this or helping with it or having support, but it is so anemic. Yeah. In terms of the attention that is on that. And I'm very grateful for you to have not taken that out and kept it in your mission.
Absolutely. And we've been so fortunate to connect with the Miller family. Mm-hmm. You know, Brett Miller found his tumor when he was 17. Mm-hmm. And
talk about lifetime impact.
Right. And he didn't get diagnosed for 6 or 7 years later because the doctors kind of just kept, you know, poo-pooing it. Oh, it's hormones. It's this or that. And then, you know, anyways, his surgeon basically said to him, you know, please promise me that when we're done with this, that you go out and tell everybody that men get breast cancer too.
Good for him.
So they started the Male Breast Cancer Coalition, and it was just natural that we aligned with them, and we just partner with them. That's why they're on our brochure, and we share information. They are a wealth of information.
I'm telling you, I went looking, and I didn't expect to see that, and I was very happy to see it.
They're
phenomenal. And I think it's a perfect connection. Yeah. So tell me about how do you provide... How does it translate the provision of financial assistance, emotional support?
Right.
How? Let's talk about the actual infrastructure of the organization.
So what I wanted to do, what was critical for me, it didn't matter.
And how long have you had the organization?
Since 2014.
Okay.
So right after I finished sort of my initial treatment, I thought we got to get going. So I wanted to make sure that none of us took a salary. We're all volunteers. Mm-hmm. I work my full-time job. I'm on my lunch hour now, you know, and my entire board is going to be volunteer because we know the stigma behind organizations, all organizations, but in particular breast cancer, is what I hear the most about because that's my world. And these salaries that people are getting paid, and I understand that you're running a business. I get that. But for me, it wasn't so much about starting a business. It was a passion project. It came from a need that turned into just this incredible project. And so I didn't know how I was going to do it. I mentioned it to a coworker, and he goes, well, what do you need? I said, I have to incorporate. He goes, what do you need? I said, I got to call LegalZoom. I don't know. He says, well, what's it going to cost? I said, I don't know, a couple hundred bucks. The next day, I had $200 bills in my mailbox. Mm-hmm. And he said, go do it. And so my family was instrumental in getting it funded in terms of incorporating and getting it off the ground and then obtaining our 501c3 status.
Well, let me just throw this in because I think this touches on something that's a little bit bigger, and it's something sometimes we lose focus off and lose touch with in everything that we do, whether it's our personal lives or it's business and career paths and all this stuff, is we are all brought to spots in our lives where we are faced with a choice. The choice is bigger or more connected, more still in your hands on it. And I'm not knocking large organizations in any shape or form, nor large corporations, but sometimes you have a choice of do you basically build the structure larger so you can try to reach more?
Right.
Or do you basically focus on the delivery of the quality
right.
on a smaller scale and be content to say, my footprint, my touching of mm-hmm. people's lives mm-hmm. is not how big I can make this organization,
it's how personal.
But how personal For and us, how close personal. I am Absolutely. Still to that end person that I'm giving care to.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And what I'm getting from you right. is that that is more important for you.
That is more important for me, and it's a constant battle that I have with myself of my board members of our small board. Five of them are, including myself, are survivors. So mm-hmm. that we come from a very passion, hands-on, you know, holding that patient's hand perspective. And then I have some other business folks that are fantastic, and they're more on the business end going, but where do you see yourself in 5 mm-hmm. years? But what do you want to do? Well, how can we do mm-hmm. this better? And I'm like, whoa, I agree. I don't know. You know, I just want to make sure that we stay personal. Mm-hmm. My goal was not to replace or compete with any other charity, not even the small ones yeah. in my area. My goal was to fill in the gaps. So we have another organization in town that was the very first one in Riverside where we're based, and they're under the Community Health Foundation. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of limited with what they can do. They don't do financial aid, but they have fantastic support groups. Mm-hmm. They do yoga on Saturdays. They have a lot of educational mm-hmm. stuff that I go to and I share with my mm-hmm. Survivor Social Club. But I needed to fill in the gaps. I needed someone to step in and just pay my electric bill for 1 month when I was in chemo and hot flashing and I had to run the AC crazy
right.
In a way that I never would have had to.
Right.
And so my aim, my goal, and what my board's gotten behind in our community is filling in those gaps with the everyday necessities that become luxuries. So it is important to us that we sponsor one family at the holidays in a big way. That makes a huge impact because it was done for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be that group that has 100 people lined up at their door to get a food box. That's fantastic for those people. That's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hug you. I need to touch you. Mm-hmm. I need to make you feel part of my family.
Table, that holiday table
right.
with you.
Right, exactly. Right.
Or bring you into my home.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I get it. I totally do.
Hopefully, going forward, we can help more people mm-hmm. on a bigger scale,
but at
always
that level
maintain the level of personal touch.
So I don't want to run out of time, yeah. but there's a couple of things I want to do. You want to give a shout out to your board or anybody that you'd like to basically mention, please feel free to do that.
I have so many people, but let me just tell you the crux of how we fundraise.
How do you fundraise?
We have one annual gala every year. Okay. It's usually at the end of September, very beginning of October. This year will be October 5th.
Okay.
We profile a few survivors or people that are in treatment right now. It's just a way to show our community, when you donate, these are the people whose lives you're touching mm-hmm. and how. So we have that one thing that we host. But I have fantastic friends that I only know because of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a friend who's a Zumba instructor, Jerry Lee, who hosts a Zumbathon every year at Raceway Ford because Bill Chamberlain over there lets us use his property. And they raise, you know, $4,000 to $5,000 a year.
It's amazing.
And then I have another friend who's a ballroom dance teacher. So she hosts 2 dance showcases per year down in Palm Desert. She's raised, you know, $8,000 a year.
So people are engaging
people
with
are,
what they have a passion
absolutely.
For.
Absolutely. And that's all it takes. Mm-hmm. Our board members contribute financially every
mm-hmm.
month.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple monthly donors, like my niece, Steve's sister, donates $20 a month,
yeah.
you know. She's had several aunts and great aunts and grandmother in her family that have been touched by breast mm-hmm. cancer. So, you know, people just, a lot of our clients that we've helped come back. Those are, in fact, all the other survivors on the board are people that have come to the CARE Project for support in one way, shape, or form.
And we say this, Carrie, on the show all the time, that really when you delve deeper than the surface in a lot of these cases where people are giving, there's a personal story. There's some connection on
yeah.
a very personal
Something's
level, very
mean,
that has
Absolutely.
Touched them to engage in this level.
Yeah.
Because it's hard. It's emotionally hard. It
yeah.
draws on parts of you that you'd rather not engage in, maybe,
Absolutely.
You know, if you want to be that comfort bubble.
Right.
And it basically puts you out there. And so how can people get involved? How can people be supportive?
I think, you know, learning everything that we do. We do a whole lot, more than I could tell you in a show.
And a lot of that is on your website?
All of that is on our website, and our Facebook is very active as well. But we don't have a traditional support group. We have a social club. Mm-hmm. The Survivor Social Club gets together once a month. Listen, I didn't want to go to a support group. I felt okay. I probably wasn't, looking back, but I felt okay. But for me, I just needed to be around other people that had been there, done that, that understand, no, I can't go walk through the plaza with you for 2 hours because I'm going to get exhausted and my immune system shot. I'm going to need to rest. And you're not going to like that. And then you're going to get annoyed. And then I'm going to feel bad. So we wanted to socialize, but yet still create an atmosphere that was homey. So I've even had them come to my house where we just sit around and have brunch. And so what's going on with you?
Yeah, there's no...
And it's very organic, right?
Yeah, I, and I love that. That's how I live.
So we do fun things.
Too.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing that, that you also, you know, you words mean things. Okay.
Absolutely.
You know, people that are baby boomers, Paul will tell you he won't go to a senior center.
Right.
But he may go to a wellness center.
Right.
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 It may be the same exact same friggin' building, but I just changed the sign on the door. Right.
The culture.
And I changed the programming that happens inside.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is I'm not knocking sports support groups.
And we're
They're
not
very
for
important.
Everybody.
But
we're
you're
not
for everybody either.
Absolutely
yeah. But
not.
It's a social circle.
It's a social circle that organically provides support for sure.
And okay. So as we're closing, I want to do two things. Before your gala event, whenever you guys put out, you know, tickets or whatever to it, so you start fundraising for it and promoting it, I want you to come back.
Okay.
Okay, so we can talk about that too.
Fantastic.
If you want to have anybody else from your board come on as well or call in, please feel free to do it because I really think it's more meaningful when we share individual personal stories to this.
Absolutely.
Also, I want you to go ahead and give the website again.
It's the careprojectinc.org.
Careprojectinc.org, and then check them out on Facebook, too. Yeah. You know, reach out to Carrie, reach out to her organization. They are really very much genuinely givers, and they are there to social club you instead of support group you, right? But I really, really love the fact that this is the first show of the year and that we basically started out with this very candid, very positive message of... It isn't how much you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's where your heart is when you're doing it.
Absolutely.
So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And sharing from the heart.
Yeah, thanks.
I appreciate it.
I'll be back.
You will be back. I will look forward
Maybe
to
we'll bring Steven.
Steve. Oh, Steve.
Hey, boss.
Hey, boss. Do you want to come join us next time? Thank you, Carrie, very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us on this first episode of The Rad Life. We look forward to bringing you more of this. Wow, I really am... Very grateful that you were here today.
Thank you.
So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.